Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, actress and CAU alumna Terry Abney is here to talk about her new film, Loving. Celebrity photographer Simone Green is in the studio to chat about her book, Time Served, My Days and Nights on Death Row Records. And Johnetta Boone gives us the ins and outs of costume design. But first, here's this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Central Casting is seeking experienced actors, men and women, who can portray U.S. Embassy personnel to work multiple days on the set of MacGyver from Wednesday, October 19th through Sunday, October 30th. Actors must be clean-cut, well-groomed, and businesslike. Military experience is a plus. If this fits you, please submit your information to macatl@centralcasting.com with the subject line Embassy Worker. Central Casting is also seeking over-the-top hairstylists and their customers for the taping of an episode of the new Fox series, Star. This is an excellent opportunity for hairstylists to show off their work and for their regular beauty customers to be their models. Participants' hair must already be show-ready and styled in a unique fashion. Please send photos of your hair show-worthy work to star@centralcasting.com with hair show in the email subject line. In other related entertainment news, four-time Grammy Award-winning singer and songwriter Erykah Badu will host this year's Soul Train Awards for the second year in a row. This year's Legend Award will be presented to multi-platinum and three-time Grammy Award-winning producer, singer, songwriter, and the king of New Jack Swing, Teddy Riley. And the second annual Lady of Soul Award will be presented to singer-songwriter and actress Brandy. This year's show will air on Centric and BET on November 27th, 2016 at 8 p.m. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Hey, Upfront listeners, this is Ray Cornelius urging you to pick up your phones and dial 404-880-8807 to make your pledge of support for this show and the countless others you listen to throughout the week. That's 404-880-8807, or make your pledge of support online at WCLK.com.
You're listening to member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and now the home for in-depth arts and entertainment. Now, back to Upfront with your host, Ray Cornelius.
It's you, because you knew.
I did not know.
You knew.
How could I have known?
Come on, you're new!
How could any mother let that happen to her daughter and not say anything?
You tell me!
You childless whore. What do you know about mothering? You don't know a thing about motherhood. Who are you to take me to task like this? Who are you?
Why didn't you say something? Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you take your daughter to the police when Grace told you 20 years ago? Why didn't you? I tell you why. Because you're like everybody else. You don't want to believe it's your brother. Your father, your son could do such a thing. So they looked the other way, and that's exactly what you did. You looked the other way. You're no different than anybody else.
I didn't know.
Get out. Get out.
You just heard the voices of actresses Lynn Whitfield and Oprah Winfrey as Lady May and Mavis on OWN's hit series Greenleaf. The one-hour drama was number one amongst the network's female viewers and was one of the most watched television programs of the summer. Part of the show's success is due in part to the handiwork of my first guest, acclaimed costume designer, Johnetta Boone. Not only is she responsible for dressing these fabulous characters, but their stories are often told through her unique fashion and design.
Welcome to Upfront, Johnetta. How are you today?
I'm great, Ray. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with me. You're actually back in Atlanta working on season 2 of OWN's hit series, Greenleaf. What has it been like working on the series and with Oprah Winfrey?
Well, of course, as anyone might imagine, it's a phenomenal opportunity, one that I probably never would have dreamed of. Not probably, I'd never dreamed of working, A, with Oprah, and B, on a series such as this. It's great. It's a megachurch family drama with real issues and content that really speaks to the heart, which is also what's really great when you're working on a project that has some substance.
Okay. Now, you've also worked on a number of Tyler Perry productions. How did that opportunity come about?
Well, actually, I came to Atlanta to work on a project during a time when I was sort of transitioning. And the project started in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia lost their tax incentive, and that project moved to Atlanta. And when I came to Atlanta to work on that project, a grip on that project asked me if I had ever met the producers at Tyler Perry. And I said, no. And he said, you need to go over there and introduce yourself to them. And I said, no, I won't do that because he already has a costume designer and has had one for a number of years. And so lo and behold, that time passed and that costume designer reached out to look for someone who could do for Color Girls because they were doing 3 movies at once and he couldn't do. No, they were doing a movie and the TV shows and then for Color Girls, and he couldn't do everything. And someone that he reached out to said that you should call Johnetta Boone, and that was the beginning of my introduction to Tyler Perry, and I stayed and did 7 or 8 projects after that.
Let's talk about the process of how you style a cast. In a previous conversation, you told me that you typically are the first one to get to know the characters and see the script, and it's your duty to help the directors and producers tell the story through costumes. Let's talk about that.
Sure. Well, it's so important when you first read the script, not just to read the lines on the page or the words on the page, but also to look at the content, what the basis of the script is about. Think about whether then or not there are any realistic environments or people that are going to influence your decision and also enhance your decision. So upon doing so, I do research, of course, and then I pull from different places. I love people watching, sitting outside on the street and just seeing who people are, because people are characters. Art imitates life.
Yeah.
So you pull from those places and then you take some artistic license yourself and you either further develop those or you take away from them because they may be a little too distracting on camera and take away from the basis of the actor's performance.
When did you first discover this passion for fashion and costume design?
Whew. I think I first developed this passion, unbeknownst to me, when I was probably 10 or 11 looking at period movies from the 1940s. But I never thought it was anything that I could ever possibly achieve. Because at the time, Hollywood was not, it was untouchable for people of color. And it was just a fantasy. I studied art in high school. I went to a fine arts high school, studied design in college, and then found myself thrown into a world of fashion, which then was my segue and introduction to film.
Social media has allowed so many people to introduce themselves or portray celebrity this or celebrity that, but we know differently. How important is it for an aspiring costume designer to really understand their craft and have solid experience under their belt?
It's of uttermost importance for an aspiring costume designer or working in any genre to take the time to learn your craft. It's not enough you have good style, because style plays a small part of actually what our role is. You need to know garment construction, fabrication, how color works and how color is translated. And all those things, they don't come by fly by night. You have to learn to show yourself approved and study to show yourself approved as well. And the only way you can do so is by either, not everyone goes to school some of it is inherent, but also get yourself a mentor, someone who can guide you through the processes and share with you where to get the information that you can learn that will then enhance your career path.
So what's next with your career?
You know, it's funny because I'm always talking about how I can give back and giving back. I've taken on a mentor, but I recently received a wonderful offer. Duke Ellington High School, which is where I went to high school, is starting a costume design program.
Okay.
And another friend just randomly said, you need to talk to Janetta Boone. She can help you. But they didn't realize that I was actually an alumni of that school. So I am going to write the course requisite for their program.
Okay.
And then see where that goes. I was offered also an opportunity to do some master classes at a couple of universities. So, you know, I think that it's great, you know, to teach people the right way while I'm out in the industry as well. And then I'm also looking at, you know, there may be some design opportunities that come about as well. So we're just looking at all the possibilities that are presenting themselves, and then we will move forward with the ones that are best suited.
Right, right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for stopping by Upfront. We look forward to seeing this new season of Greenleaf, and best of luck with everything else.
Thank you so much, Ray. Wonderful to be here. I look forward to it, and it was great to see you again.
Hey, Upfront listeners, this is Ray Cornelius urging you to pick up your phones and dial 404-880-8807 to make your pledge of support for this show and the countless others you listen to throughout the week. That's 404-880-8807, or make your pledge of support online at WCLK.com.
You're listening to member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and now the home for in-depth arts and entertainment. Now, back to Upfront with your host, Ray Cornelius. You say you love me, and I think that is true.
But every night my girlfriend tells me I should watch you. That was just a taste of what viewers can expect from tonight's Lifetime movie, Surviving Compton. The two-hour drama follows the musical career of R&B diva Michelle A and her tumultuous relationships with NWA's Dr. Dre and Death Row Records CEO Suge Knight. Here to give us insight about that story and much more is celebrity photographer Simone Green. Not only was she the official photographer for Knight's iconic record label, but she too survived Compton and wrote about it in her book, Time Served, My Days and Nights on Death Row Records.
Well, welcome to Upfront, Simone. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. You're appearing on Beyond the Headlines, which is taking place tonight after Lifetime's debut of Surviving Compton, the story about Michelle A and her career as an R&B singer and her relationships with Dr. Dre and Suge Knight. You were the official photographer for Death Row Records. So let's start from the beginning. How did that all come about?
I moved from Detroit to Los Angeles like for the third time after getting my degree, and had a very big emergency in my family. And to make a long story short, my ex-husband came to California and went out one night with some friends. He's a producer, and his artist was David Ruffin Jr. And his father just happens to be David Ruffin from The Temptations.
Right.
And they met Snoop and Warren G in the men's bathroom. And that's how it all started. David told Warren, and my ex was a bass player.
Okay.
So they pulled everybody together, and that's Tony that's on a lot of the bass lines.
Okay. Now, had you been doing photography? How long had
been
you?
I've been a photographer 37 years. I was with Soul Train. I worked at Motown. I worked at Columbia. I worked at Capitol. I worked at Solar Records. So I knew Suge when he was younger, when I was over at Solar Records.
Right.
In the early years of my photography.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've been mingling and mixing with everybody for a long time, but it's funny how they all seem to come back around. The kids got to grow up and do what they do.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, that first initial meeting, like, how did you, you know, how did you become the official photographer for Death Row Records?
For one, that's in the book.
Okay.
But I'll give you a little taste.
Okay.
Snoop had his grand opening for his management company, Nightlight Productions, I think it was.
Okay.
And they had this beautiful office in Beverly Hills, and I went. Because, see, at the time, also, we pulled the Dramatics in to Los Angeles to do Doggy Dog World. And so they had this party while they were there. Sharitha Knight, Suge's wife, she was managing Snoop in the Dog Pound.
Okay.
And Suge showed up, and he was like, I've been looking for you. I haven't been able to reach out to you. Here's my number. He gave me all his numbers like he always do. And called me at 2 o'clock on Monday. That was a Friday. Yeah. I called him on Monday. I met him, and when I walked in, they announced me as the chief photographer at Death Row Records. He had never looked at my portfolio. He didn't know what I could do, but he had heard that I was pretty. I had a good eye. I think that's what he heard. Anyway,
we're talking to photographer Simone Green, who was the official photographer for Death Row Records. When did you realize that you were not just taking pictures of music artists, but you were sort of capturing what would later become history or hip hop history?
Well, it's not even just hip hop history. It's R&B history, too. What happened is I was very good friends with Gerald Levert. And when Gerald died, I realized that I had a lot of photographs of celebrities that were dying. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, maybe I was supposed to document all this. So then it went from one thing to the next, and Death Row just happened to be caught up in the mix with all of this. But I've been doing this for a long time, so I noticed that when I first got the first call for the Death Row pictures, I said, oh, I could sell some of these.
Yeah.
And the first call was from London, England, and they only bought one. And that I hadn't even moved to Atlanta.
Because you still own these images, correct?
Right. I own all the images from before, after, when, now.
Yeah.
That's one thing I did learn in college is you got to own your own stuff.
Right.
You know, Prince taught us to own our own. So I own the negatives. Now I own the discs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So let me ask you, when you're looking through those photos, what is your fondest memory?
My fondest memory, first let's talk about the photograph I missed.
Okay.
John F. K. Jr., you know, he was a cutie. And his, we were all in New York, and we were doing the thing at Radio City Music Hall, the whole Death Row crew. And he liked Death Row music. Wow. Quiet as it's kept. Okay. Nobody knew that. And he was at the party, and I missed a couple of pictures of him, you know, hanging out, you know. But that's one I missed.
Okay.
One of my fondest shots is to have a nice picture of Tupac Shakur, because he was really a nice guy.
Okay. And all of these shots are in a book that you have titled Time Served, My Days and Nights on Death Row, which chronicles a lot of these historic moments. You mentioned that you were noticing that a lot of these artists that you had taken pictures of were passing away and things of that nature. What was that process like pulling all of those pictures together for the book?
I have so many. I mean, literally, I archive. I really realized that I had a lot when a little girl from New York said, let me organize your collection. And I never thought of it like that. You know, I'm from old school. We put them all in the box.
Yeah. Moving, right? Yeah.
But, It's a process because I have thousands and thousands of negatives that I have to go through and pictures to put with the negatives to figure out what works with what.
Right.
And I don't like a lot of pose stuff, but I like it to look. You can see the person, but they're not really into me as the photographer.
Okay.
So that's the part I be looking for all the time. Yeah. Is that something that's different. I have a few things coming. In November, I got the Dog Pound with Corrupt. Corrupt was a marvelous person to photograph because he always had you had his attention,
right.
But you didn't know you had his attention. So his show is coming on Unsung in November.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, when folks are tuning into Beyond the Headlines tonight, what should they expect or what will they learn from that particular? Because once they've seen the biopic, what else will they learn by watching that show?
Well, I think the biopic portrays what they saw. or who's ever involved in that.
Right.
I can't speak on Michelle, because, I mean, I worked at Death Row and I didn't know Michelle.
Okay.
I might have seen her three times. That, to me, that's not knowing somebody.
Right.
That's just being acquainted.
Right.
So I think that the show tonight will open up a lot of people's eyes to both sides, because you can't hurt people unless you hurt somebody. Let me just leave it like that.
Okay.
When you hurt someone, they're going to forgive you, or they're going to be like, I'm going to get you back.
Right.
I think that's what this is all about.
Yeah. Is there someone now that you would just love to capture their image? Is there someone out there who's, you know, photos?
You know who I want to photograph? I want to photograph Janet Jackson and the baby. That's who I want. And yeah. Beyonce. See, they have natural beauty. They don't have to wear no makeup to be pretty, you know, and I like that. You know, I'm doing more and more work. It's just a little different now from being in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I love the West Coast. I hate the snow, but I do what I have to do.
Yeah.
You know. The book is doing well. And Time Served My Days and Nights on Death Row is really a story about me and how I survived Death Row Records.
Yeah.
Because Death Row Records was no joke. And people, they think one thing, but if you're in that same situation, you would have
a different perspective.
A different perspective about it.
You know? Yeah. What was the biggest lesson you learned from Suge Knight?
Not to trust anybody, because I trusted Suge. I did. And he showed me his tail. But, you know, I realized that everybody has that character too. You know, they're not that very nice. Like, people always ask me, well, Dre never tripped out on you. No, Dre ain't never tripped out on me. Suge had no reason to either. You feel where I'm going?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a trust thing. And I don't like people that smile and they got a different plan going on in their mind. Those kind of people can be very dangerous. So.
All right. Well, Simone Green, thank you so much for stopping by Upfront. She is the author of Time Served, My Days and Nights on Death Row Records, which chronicles all of the historic moments of the West Coast rappers. You also mentioned Motown and R&B artists.
I'm going to build you a house right here, our house.
I want to take Mildred up to D.C. and get married.
Are you sure about that?
By the power vested in me by the District of Columbia, I now pronounce you husband and wife.
In here?
Richard!
What you doing in bed with that woman?
I'm his wife.
That's no good here.
That was a clip from the upcoming movie Loving, starring my last guest, Terry Abney. The CAU alumna and rising Hollywood starlet stopped by the Upfront studios to talk about the project and much more. Well, welcome to Upfront, Terry. How are you today?
I'm amazing.
First and foremost, welcome home to CAU. We are so proud of you and everything that you've accomplished so far. You know, I've been watching you from a distance and you are really doing your thing. You have appeared on Tyler Perry's The Have and Have Nots. You've also starred in 999, the new FX series Atlanta. And now you're the face of and the voice of Faith in OWN's hit series Greenleaf. But today we're going to talk about a very special film that you're starring in titled Loving, which debuts in theaters on November the 4th. Tell us a little bit about that film and your character.
So Loving is based around the Supreme Court case, Loving versus Virginia, which was passed or won in 1967, Richard and Mildred Loving, two ordinary people in Caroline County, Virginia, who love one another, Richard being a white man, Mildred being a black woman, and just wanting to be together. And they got married. They were exiled from Virginia to D.C.
Okay.
And they returned to Virginia to only be incarcerated again, be re-exiled to D.C. With no real repercussions other than having to pay money because they had an amazing lawyer, Frank Beasley. They were persistent, and so they fought for about 10 years to essentially return home.
Wow.
And that came from Mildred Loving writing to the president at the time,
okay,
Kennedy, and him telling them to go ahead and write Mr. Cohen and let him know that they needed help. And so she did that, and they were able to, they fought. They went through every level of the
right, because this went all the way to the Supreme Court.
All the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And so tell us about your character.
I play Garnett Jeter, who is the younger sister to Mildred Loving. They were extremely close. She was overprotective, had a lot of personality, a lot of sass, a lot of pizzazz, a lot of attitude, just fun. But outside of that, what I can tell you about the actual, the two of them, they were always together. They were best friends.
Right.
And so it was hard for Mildred. It was also hard for Garnett, that's my character, to witness her sister be exiled, but then also to see and stomach what she had to go through, because it wasn't easy. And I could only imagine the emotions that she actually went through being pulled away from her best friend. I went to their houses in Caroline County, Virginia, and they literally were thick as thieves. Richard built a house for Mildred. Garnett's house is right across the street from that house. Okay. That's how close they were.
I'm talking to actress Terry Abney, who is starring in the upcoming film Loving. And Terry is here in the Upfront Studios. Now, how did you, you know, you saw the film. How did you really prepare? You mentioned that you had an opportunity to go to the homes of your of the characters. But how did you really prepare to play this character?
I wrote a lot of notes. And this film is quiet in that there's not a lot of speaking all the time, and a lot of the action and a lot of the moments happen moment to moment in just a breath or a look or a hand touch or emotions. And so I wrote a lot about my relationship with my sister. I wrote a lot about my relationship, or the relationship that my grandmother and her sister had. But not only that, I went to work. I have a notebook that's this thick of information from the time period. I was online printing for days about the case, attempting to find things on Garnett, because there are not that many things on Garnett. I went back to the Board of Education, those laws, the paper bag tests, the doll tests, the passing laws, people who were passing, why were they passing? Because in Caroline County, there was a mixing of three races, Native Americans, whites, blacks. And so a lot of people were able to pass. And so when I went to Caroline County on my own, there's a road called Passing Road. And, you know, in small towns, their roads name these things for reasons. Like there's a Jeter Road. That's the name of the family,
right?
The Jeter family. And then there's a Passing Road. So a lot of people were passing for white at the time. And honestly, when I went, I could understand why. When I met a lot of the people just boldly getting out of my car to speak to them, a lot of them, you couldn't tell what they were. They didn't look, I'm light skinned, and they didn't look like me.
Wow.
You know, they look like they were white or Native American. And a lot of them are technically, because of the one drop rule, deemed black. And so I read about the miscegenation laws, love that word, the one drop rule. But literally, for me, it was, I needed to understand the world.
Right.
I needed to understand the time period, what was happening. Because I've experienced racism, but not to the degree or the level that my grandmother experienced that.
Right. Now, are you the type of actor where you stay and remain in character the entire time that you're filming? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So what was that experience like?
Stressful, a little nerve-wracking. I don't know. I think that when I get to go home, I can kind of come out of it a little bit. But that lives with me. Parts of Garnett actually still right now are living with me, and we stopped filming a year ago.
Wow.
You invest so much of yourself into a role and into a character.
Yeah.
And I mean, I could even say the same thing for Faith Greenleaf.
Yeah. And I wanted to switch gears and talk about that. That's been such an amazing show. I am a huge fan. I got a chance to talk to Lamon Rucker.
He's amazing.
Yeah, in an earlier Upfront show. And so what has that experience been like? Because the show is really centered around your character, Faith, who is no longer living, but yet we are hearing her voice. We're seeing different images of her, and you play a very major role. So what has that been like, starring in such a huge series?
I keep using words like blessings and faith, and I have a vocabulary, but that's just what it is.
Yeah.
I'm grateful. And at that time, I didn't have that much faith in myself.
Right.
And to think about who Faith is, and I actually auditioned for a completely different character. I auditioned for, I think, Danielle Turner, who was the young lady who gets raped.
Okay.
16-year-old girl who's right. getting raped.
Yeah.
And then I get this email saying they want you to read for Faith Greenleaf. And I'm like, what? And they're like, but you're still going to read Danielle's sides. And they want her to be like Lisa okay. Bonet. They want her to look like Lisa Bonet and to have this, to be very, almost like lifeless or lost. And at that moment in my life, I was a little lost and unsure of myself and unsure of what I was doing as an artist. And I looked at it and I looked in the mirror and I'm like, I have to take this other character and be this character.
Right.
Okay, let's do it and be this other character. And it's interesting because I feel like Faith was the faith of, like, the hope, the faith of the family. And so when they lose her, you know, symbolically, they lose Faith. And so even when Grace leaves, they lose the grace within the family. So things technically go a little crazy.
Yeah.
But again, I just feel grateful. Like, it's just like me, God, like,
yeah,
me, yeah, little old insecure, yeah, yeah, you know, me.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much for stopping by the Upfront Studios. Again, we are so happy for you to know me personally, to know and have known you all this time, and you were a student here and seen you up and down the hallways and running to auditions and getting prepared for shows, and now we're seeing you on television. It warms our hearts to see you really out there in front of the camera and doing some amazing things. So we appreciate you stopping by. How can our listeners keep up with you on social media?
Terry, TerriVictoriaAbney is my Instagram. And then just Terry Abney on Facebook.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'd like to thank my guests, costume designer Johnetta Boone, photographer and book author Simone Green, and actress Terry Abney. I would also like to thank my engineer Mark Angel and you, the listener. Make sure you tune in next Saturday, October 22nd, for another edition of Upfront. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, has been brought to you by Atlanta's jazz station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.